For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
How are you now? How are you? Right now. Well, folks, it's the start of a little bit of a homestand for the Montreal Canadiens. Well, not the start. They already played a game. What am I talking about? They had the game against the Leafs on the weekend. But they are home again, or they were home again, on Tuesday night. Hello and welcome to episode 65 of the Bottom 6 Minutes podcast presented by Habs Eyes and the Prize. I am Matt Drake, and we're here to talk about the Habs continuing that homestand against the Columbus Blue Jackets at the Bell Center. Columbus, of course, are another non-playoff team. So this is one of those games where they're actually behind the Habs, or ahead of the Habs, depending on how you look at it, in the lottery race. So in the lottery race, they're ahead. They're behind the Habs in the overall standings. So this is a game where you kind of maybe want them to lose. That being said, right, we know that from here on out, there are going to be games like that. They're going to play against other teams that are non-playoff, and maybe they'll win, maybe they'll lose. I think what we really need to look for more than anything in those games, personally, as somebody who is team tank adjacent, I've talked about this before on the podcast, I think what we really need to look for more than wins and losses is, you know, what are some good performances that can take us into next year, that can give us something positive to look forward to next year. So we're going to talk about that game, everything that happened therein. I do feel that there were some absolute positives to come out of that one. But first, as you all know, BetOnline continues to be your number one source for all your basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year. March Madness is coming up. How about that? With up-to-the-minute odds, stats, and trends, you can follow your favorite team's path to the playoffs with live in-game betting, contests, and all the best player props. Experience the world's best wagering platform from any time, from your desktop or your mobile devices. Head to BetOnline today to become part of the team. Remember to use promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. And the Montreal Canadiens started their game with a tribute. I think everybody's probably quite familiar with Pierre Rudd, who is the longtime voice of the Montreal Canadiens on Réseau des Sports. His brother recently passed away, Paul Rudd, and they did a nice homage to him before the game, had a moment of silence for him, and then they panned the camera over to Pierre himself, who, you know, a true legend of broadcasting. Didn't bother to miss this game. I'm sure they gave him the opportunity to take that night off and just sit and watch the game in the crowd and see the response that his brother got from the fans. But he didn't do that. He called that game, as he always does. I've been listening to this guy my entire life. I mean, he's been doing RDS, I think, since the late 80s, if I'm not mistaken. I cannot recall a time where I didn't watch that, or games, rather, where that man was on the call. And so I have a lot of respect for him, and I feel for him and his family, and I hope everybody who listens to the podcast and follows the Montreal Canadiens will join me in sending sincere condolences to him and his family. You know, that's a rough thing to go through, and it seemed like he really appreciated the response that he got from the fans. So, Pierre, on t'aime bien. And apparently the Montreal Canadiens do too, because they gave him something to yell et le but about very early in the game, 21 seconds in, as a matter of fact. Puck gets dumped into the offensive zone, and Columbus, their defense, they bobble it a little bit. It's kind of moving up the half wall, and Jake Evans comes screaming in there and just shovels it on the backhand into the slot, and Brendan Gallagher standing right there and redirects it past Elvis Merzlikins and into the net. It's 1-0. Again, 21 seconds into the game, we're hearing it. Et le but. And they keep their foot on the gas pedal after that. Mathieu Olivier takes a holding penalty shortly after. That's a big mistake. We get some nice puck movement. Puck goes up to the point. Mike Matheson gets a hold of it, puts it right in the wheelhouse for Juraj Slafkovský, and he hammers this one through everyone, 2-0. And that was only their second shot of the game. So two shots, two goals. They're batting 1,000 in this game so far. Really, just a screaming hot start for them. Shortly after that, The Habs get into the zone on a rush. Alex Newhook, he's kind of bottled up there. He's got Columbus players surrounding him. He circles back around to the point, gets it over to Arber Jacki. He bombs one on net, and Joshua Roy is standing in front of that net, tips it past Merzlikins and into the net. Merzlikins seemed to want some goaltender interference there, but they replayed it. There was clearly no kind of interference, no challenge from the Columbus Blue Jackets. As a matter of fact, they pulled Elvis Merzlikins after that. And it's 3-0 for the Montreal Canadiens. Merzlikins is out. This is all in the first 5 minutes of the period, by the way. And the Habs have a big lead, but here's the thing. We all know how the Montreal Canadiens have operated with a lead so far this season. It has been, in a word, shit. And it kind of was that for the remainder of the first period. So don't be fooled by the 3-0 quick lead that they built up in the first 5 minutes of the period. The shots for the remainder of that period were 22-8. Or sorry, not for the remainder. That was the total shots at the end of the period, 22-8. Caden Primeau getting his first start since the, it is his first start since they traded Jake Allen. And he was magnificent in that period. He made a wicked save on Alex Texier, where there was a rebound. Like, he made the first save, and then the rebound came out to Texier, and then he shoots it up and trying to go for the top part of the net. And Primeau somehow gets over there and manages to get his glove on it. Just incredible period from him. Wondering, is he going to be able to carry that into the second and the third? Because they're on pace right now, the Blue Jackets are, for 66 shots in this game after 20 minutes. This is the Habs playing like they tend to do with a lead. We get a bit of a penalty fest at the end of the first period, and that leads to some kills that the Habs have to execute at the start of the second. First, a short 4-on-3, which they managed to kill, and then almost a full 5-on-4 power play, and they kill that too. And that seems to give them a little bit of momentum, at least. Now they're starting to look like maybe they don't want to be that typical Habs with a lead that they usually are. But another thing became true, or very clear at the very least, in the second period, and that's that the refs were not going to be calling Columbus for very much at all. They were getting away with a whole heck of a lot, and I don't know. Like, I think you got to expect that a little bit with the score being the way it is. I mean, right after the 3-0 goal, they called a really weak penalty against the Habs. They were clearly looking to get the Habs and looking to not get the Blue Jackets for anything. So the Habs had to operate within that, and they actually did better in the second period. The shot total at the end of the second was 10-8 in favor of the Habs. So they climbed their way back into the shot total just a little bit in that period. Maybe a bit of a departure from their usual complete futility with a lead, but we go into the third period, the 3-0 lead is still intact, and now it's a mission. It's a mission, right? Your goaltender's been giving you a fucking amazing game in nets. You gotta go out there and close this one out in the third period for them. Very early in the period, they call Josh Anderson for an extremely soft hook, all right? It's incredibly soft. I mean, I think in a tighter game, there's no way they call that on anybody. But because the Habs are up, you know, they're going to give it to the Jackets. They're going to give them everything that they want. And, you know, you just got to go out there and kill the penalty. And they do. They actually managed to kill that off. And then they're back to being handled at 5-on-5. Caden Primeau, however, is giving up nothing. The closest that the Blue Jackets can get is a couple of posts. The Habs finally get a power play near the midway point. After all the infractions the refs let go, they can't score on it, but it removes a little bit of pressure at the very least. And then in the final 5 minutes, Carson Meyer of the Jackets high sticks Caden Gooley in front of the net. They can't ignore that one, but at least this is going to kill some time, right? Wrong. Caden Primeau had to face multiple high-quality scoring chances during that second power play that the Habs got. A huge departure from what we saw in the first period. Their first power play, they went in and they were surgical. They were moving the puck well. You get the power plays in the third period, and all of a sudden, they don't know what that is anymore or how to do it. It was incredibly frustrating to watch, but I'll tell you what wasn't frustrating. It was Caden Primeau and how calm, collected, the reserved movement that he was showing in the crease, the absolute shutting down of angles. I mean, like I said, the best that they could do was hit the post on him. So we get down to the final 2 minutes. You know, the Jackets are pressing. It's, you know, are they going to get, if they get one, maybe they could get two. We're really not at a point right now where it feels like the win is in question, but is that shutout in question? It is not. With the final seconds ticking away on the clock, the fans are chanting Primeau up in the stands, and the Habs close this one out. A 3-0 win with a 41-save shutout for Caden Primeau. I'm just going to jump right into the player of the game at this point, and I think you all know it's got to be Caden Primeau. That was a magnificent performance, and after the game, he got first star of the night, obviously, in the Bell Center. He goes out, he gets to throw some pucks to the fans, and then he goes over and has his interview with Mardini. And one of the questions, the last question that he asked, actually, I thought was the most important one, where he asked, you know, now that the three-goalie thing is done in Montreal, how do you see the rest of this season going? And Caden Primeau gave him a very simple, short answer. He just said, it's just the beginning. And then he signed the lens and he walked off, and I went, man, I hope that's true. I really hope that's true. I mean, Samuel Montembeau has been very good this season, and he was very good last season, and there's been reason to believe that he could be a legitimate starter for this team. But you see some other teams that have more of like a two-goalie system, a 1A, 1B, like Boston, and they have some success. I don't think there's any damage to the Habs if we get a bit of a goaltending controversy next season, and both of them are pushing each other to be better. I've said for a while, coming out of the Carey Price era, that's what they need. They need the goaltenders in their system or on their NHL team to be pushing each other to see who can really rise to the top and become undeniable. I don't think we're going to get another Carey Price. I mean, I shouldn't really say that because I said that about Patrick Roy when he got traded. I said, I don't think we're going to get another one of those guys in my lifetime. And then we got Carey Price. So I don't think we're going to get another Carey Price, but if they have anybody in the system right now who could be that, it's going to take them pushing each other. And Caden Primeau coming out playing the way that he did in that game, if he can keep that level of play, I'm not saying he needs to shut people out with 41 saves every night. I think the team is probably hoping to fuck that he doesn't have to face 41 shots every night, but if he can come out and play that well and, you know, show that calmness in net, show really good cutting off angles. He's the movement in the crease was just so efficient. Everything about that performance was beautiful. It was Price-esque in a way. Not trying to say he's going to be Carey Price, right? But if you want to develop another Carey Price, I don't think they really have anybody at that talent level, but it's going to take them pushing each other. And who knows? Next season, this team, I think, is gearing up to be better and potentially pushing for a playoff spot. They're going to need both of their goaltenders to play really well, and maybe they could split the games. I don't know. It would give you a lot of really interesting options if Caden Primeau's play could become more consistent. And I'll tell you what, his last two games, they brought it up during his interview. He's had his last two games on home ice have been shutouts. Something about him playing at the Bell Center. So maybe you give him all the Bell Center games next year and you give Montembeau all the road games, you know, failing, of course, back-to-backs. But all this to say, I know I've kind of rambled on for a minute here. That was an absolute treat to watch from a goaltending perspective. And it's not something that you necessarily want your goaltender to have to do, but knowing that you have a goaltender capable of doing it, you know, we spent many years watching Carey Price do exactly that, so we know how nice it can be to see from time to time. So kudos to him. I hope this is a sign of things to come now that the three-goalie system is finally out of the way and they don't have to deal with that anymore. And that brings me to another point with, you know, you got to talk to Team Tank, right? Because I know a lot of people were looking at the Tankathon, or they were looking at the standings, whatever, and they see the Blue Jackets a couple points behind the Habs. I think there are 4 points behind the Habs going into this game, maybe. 4 or 3, whatever, it doesn't matter. They're behind the Habs, so a loss here would have done a lot for the Tank, potentially. But it also would have required, of course, the Columbus Blue Jackets to continue winning, which you know, they may or may not do. It's hard to say. And I think this is one of those games where you can kind of take a step back from the Tank maybe and say, all right, well, we got an amazing goaltending performance, and it wasn't until they had put 3 goals past the other team that they stopped kind of playing. And we know that that's already something that they do. So I feel like this was an acceptable blow to the Tank. There's plenty of games from here on out that the Habs are probably more likely to lose than they are to win. So we'll see, but I think that this was not too bad of a holdup for the Tank at this point. So enough about that. And I do have to touch, though, on the whole playing with a lead thing, because I think this game was a perfect example of how bad they are at playing with a lead. And specifically, I want to point out the power play. I talked about it a little bit during the recap. You saw in the first period, they get a power play and it's immediate. It's surgical, like I said. And then in the third period, the puck's a grenade all of a sudden. They don't know how to move it. They don't know how to gain the zone. They certainly don't know how to keep it there. And the Blue Jackets are coming and attacking like with numbers and getting high quality scoring chances. That's all the evidence that you need that there's either it's something mental or it's in the coaching. And one way or another, they need to address it before next season. As I mentioned, I think this team is gearing up to be better next year and to potentially challenge for a playoff spot. If that's something that you want to do, you fucking better be able to play with a lead, man. This is a league where they've changed rules to try to make scoring happen more often. They officiate in a way to try and make scoring happen more often. You saw what happened in this very game, right? They, you know, after the Habs got up to that 3-0 lead, it took a while before the refs actually acknowledged any of the illegal things that Columbus was doing. So you know that the games are going to be officiated a certain way. You know that the rules are geared towards more scoring. You've got to be able to close those games out. You've got to be able to keep your foot on the gas pedal once you gain a lead. And the Habs can't do that. They have a tendency, whenever they put up leads, to score in bunches and then disappear. I've said it before, right? A one-goal lead, they kind of stop playing. A two-goal lead and beyond, they leave the fucking building. It's brutal. And they got to address that, I think, going into next year if they have any aspirations. I mean, if they're fine being a lottery team again next year, then go ahead. Don't make any adjustments. But you got to figure that out, because it is going to be very problematic for them next season if they have any playoff aspirations. Enough of the negativity. I don't want to talk about that too much. We've addressed it. I think everybody's aware of it. We do need to single out some other really good performances in that game. And I want to start with David Savard, who, I think he blocked at least 10 shots in that game. I think they credited him with 8, but I think it was at least 10, if not more. At one point, he blocked a shot, lost his skate blade, and then had to row himself over to the bench on one foot and then leapt into the bench to try and get somebody else on to cover for him. He had quite the performance in that game. I've been hard on that guy numerous times in his tenure with the Montreal Canadiens, and this is not a night where you could be hard on him whatsoever. He did all of the things that I thought were going to make him an attractive target at the trade deadline. I thought would maybe get somebody to offer them a first-round pick, but apparently that never materialized. And look, if he's going to be around, him being able to do things like that, just sacrificing his body, making a good first pass, it was a night where not a lot of people were making a good first pass, and he was. And he was also doing so hobbled half the time because he's taking clappers off the legs. Like, that was a very, very good performance from him on the blue line. And I think he earned a lot of respect. Even Primo, in his post-game interview, he mentioned it. He said, yeah, I think Savvy might have stopped more shots than I did. And that's not true, because you stopped a lot of them, Caden. But, you know, Savard was definitely there making a lot of very key blocks for that team. And, you know, things like that, they gain the respect of your teammates always, because it's a very selfless thing to do. It doesn't feel good. If you've ever taken a clapper to the legs, you know there's virtually no spot on your leg or foot or anywhere where it feels good to take one of those shots. And, you know, somebody who does it that often in a game, you know, it's a skill as well. It's not just something that you do haphazardly. Obviously, it's not ideal, because when you're blocking shots, it means the other team has the puck. And that's not what you want, but the fact that he's able to put himself in that position constantly over and over and over again, it's something. And he had a great game, and he deserves some recognition for it. We also saw yet another Joshua Roy goal, as I mentioned during the recap, and I think that goal deserves a little bit more recognition as well, because if you look at the full play, I really wish they played it so I could have clipped the whole thing and put it on Twitter. But when they gain the zone, it's just Roy and Alex Newhook, right? And Newhook's the puck carrier, and Roy kind of makes himself available on the right-hand side like he's expecting a pass, and Newhook doesn't do that, and then he's bottled up at that point, and he peels back and heads towards the point. And Roy, he could do one of two things, right? He could kind of go hang out in the face-off circle and try to put himself open for a one-timer. He doesn't do that. No, he drives immediately, goes in and fills that lane in front of the net. He knows they need a body there, because he knows that probably Newhook's going to have to drop that off to a trailer and a shot's going to come, and you got to create some traffic out front. And I know people, when I say things like this, people say, oh, you're overhyping him. I'm not trying to overhype him. I'm trying to point out hockey sense, all right? And sometimes hockey sense is more difficult to quantify, right? It's these little details in your game where you go to the right area at the right time, and then it ends up leading to something. And that's it's something that players often either have or don't have. It's hard to teach, right? That hockey sense is something that's developed over a very long period. If you get somebody into the NHL and they have no hockey sense, it's hard to get them to all of a sudden have it. You need to try to, if they have one tool, you want them to use that tool to exploit the other team as much as possible. Mike Hoffman, very good example. Guy with not a ton of hockey sense, but an amazing shot. And he's had a long career in the NHL because he's figured out how to use that one tool to his advantage. Joshua Huet is not that kind of player. He's a very cerebral player, and this is what I want to try and convince people to see more of in him. What I've been seeing in him since I've been watching him in junior is precisely that, is that he very often goes to the right area. He does these very little things well that lead to more opportunities for him, and that's how he overcomes a big deficiency in his game, which is his skating. He doesn't have the straight line speed or the agility of some of the other guys that are in the NHL. In fact, of many of the other guys that are in the NHL. And this is how he does it. Plays exactly like that. And it worked for him in that game. So another good game from him. He was one of the better forwards statistically in that game for the Montreal Canadiens. And last but not least, I do want to talk about Juraj Slafkovský. That shot on the power play, man. Woo, that was a cannon. And we've all seen all of the, you know, the clips of him staying after practice or coming early to practice and working with Dr. Schott. We know Joshua Huet has actually been working with Dr. Schott too now after practice. He was doing that apparently yesterday. And Slafkovský has clearly benefited from that. Early on this season, when he would get those one-time opportunities, more often than not, they're not going, not only are they not going in the net, he might miss or he might actually whiff on the shot altogether and see it just like trickle towards the net. It's not happening anymore. When Mike Matheson passes him the puck, and it's always Mike Matheson up at the top on that power play, he's more often than not obliterating that thing. He gets stopped sometimes or he gets blocked sometimes, but he's getting really good velocity on it, and his wheelhouse seems to be bigger than it was. So now it doesn't have to be this amazingly perfect slow pass. They can hit him with hard, fast passes, and his wheelhouse is bigger, so he can just get a lot of, you know, a lot of wood on it. It's not actually wood, it's carbon fiber at this point, all these sticks, but he can get a lot of wood on it, and he can get a lot of velocity on it, and that's leading to goals, and it's huge for this power play. Matter of fact, this power play this season, Jason Paul had a graphic that he put up on Twitter. If anybody hasn't seen it, you should go and check out his Twitter account. It's at Wave Intel. And the Habs have the best power play this year that they've had in like the last 6 years. So, you know, take from that what you will. They're starting to improve on an area that's going to be very important for them when they're getting ready to compete. And a big part of that is, of course, the fact that it's not one-dimensional anymore. It's not just Cole Caulfield taking shots from his spot. They've got Slafkovský over there that provides them another option. And that's just a wonderful thing to see. It's night and day when they've got two different options that can shoot. It really forces the killers to actually look in different areas. They can't just camp out on one guy. So, that's about all I got to say about that game. I thought, again, you wish that they didn't play so terribly with a lead. I certainly wish they didn't play so terribly with a lead. However, I think you got to look at how they established that lead. Excellent. And the fact that their goaltender really stole the show. Good things to see from a rebuilding team, even though the 2 points do hurt the tank a little bit. So I'm going to cut it off there. What are we running? Over 22 minutes. Alors, c'est une grosse soirée pour les employés de soutien. We are on Spotify, Google Play, Apple. I'm on Twitter at DrakeMT. Drop me a follow. I would appreciate that very much. This episode was brought to you by BetOnline. Thank you, as always, for listening. And, of course, à la prochaine.